We have been in the book of Daniel for the last couple weeks. This week we will be in Daniel chapter 3. And it is the story we all know. As Logan pointed out, I think it was a chocolate bunny covered with gold wrapper in the VeggieTales version. So that is what we are going to talk about today. It's VeggieTales. Just kidding. I've said it a lot previously that typically when we get these kid stories, when we see the VeggieTales version, we get these presumptions of a story that aren't always the most accurate. And I think VeggieTales does a good job teaching kids some of the overarching themes. I think it does a good job about showing the extent or not showing quite the extent of things, but showing kids a version of it. And if y'all have ever watched VeggieTales, we used to have all the VeggieTales on VHS at Nana's house. I think that might be the only place I've ever seen VeggieTales. Is on VHS at Nana's house. But if you think about it, you have these three guys and they are talking about the chocolate bunny and they're supposed to bow down to it and all that's fine and dandy. But I think we got a little bit of background last week. I think we missed some of the more meaty themes in this. And Jason said some things that him and I had a little bit of a back and forth on last week, but he did say one thing that I want to bring up today that is important as we move forward. Because this circumstance, and I don't want to say and everybody think that every circumstance that you're ever in throughout life is puppeteered by God. I don't want us to think that, but there are circumstances that the sovereign God does bring forth. And who brought forth Nebuchadnezzar? It says it very clearly. Who brought forth Babylon to take over Israel? God. He's referred to as a servant of God. And so what do we know about everything? Not everything. What do we know about at least the circumstance that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Mishael, I'm not even going to pretend like I remember it, Azariah and Hananiah, right? Sounds good. As long as it sounds good, right? But what do we know about their circumstance? This was a circumstance that was set forth by God. God delivers them into the hands. God puts them into certain situations. Now, where I want to differentiate is you can be in a circumstance and not be doing godly things. So not everything that is happening in a circumstance put forth by God is godly. Does that? It sounds like we're splitting hairs, but I don't want us to think that. Because there's an easy thought process that can go down the road of they were put in this circumstance, they're supposed to do everything the king tells them. They're supposed to, like, they're supposed to fall in line with the leader of the time. They're supposed to. And what do we see that's contradictory to that? Throughout this whole process, Daniel is, in his guidance to the king, pointing him to God. When he was asked to eat food that he was not supposed to eat, what did he do? He stood up. In a manner that didn't have him beheaded, in a manner that was, like, because I think, again, we can get down into the weeds of, well, if this is, I know sometimes we play into the extremes. Sometimes we can go, well, Daniel could have done anything in that situation. It didn't matter. He was protected by God in this instance and this, that, and other. And I think that might be too far of a stretch that direction. And this is where we get into some deep theology that is mixed, and I want us to realize that what is Daniel's focus through the whole thing? He's acting as a vessel of God. We sometimes go down the rabbit hole that it didn't, I mean, he could have just come out pissing vinegar and throwing a tantrum and all this stuff, and everything would have been okay. But he's acting how God has called him to act in this circumstance. So we can't separate those two. Does that make any sense? I wanted to kind of, I don't know if I did cleared it up in here or muddied it. Just because we're in a circumstance that was brought forth by God doesn't mean that we now can act however we want to act. Daniel does a very good job reflecting what God has intended for him to do. I'm going to leave that there. If y'all have any questions about that, this is something that I wrestle with deeply on a weekly basis, because some of the themes that we semi-talked about last week kind of fell into a little bit of a Calvinist viewpoint, not asking everybody to, but this is something that I wrestle with, so I kind of had to chuckle after I left last week. Just had to chuckle about some of the stuff, because it's something that, man, I wrestle with, and I'm not going to act like I don't, but at the end of the day, we have this big picture of this circumstance that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are put into. Their objective and what God has called them to do is to show God's glory. And they do a good job, a very good job at that. And so in Daniel chapter 3, we're talking about Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to read through that real fast. This also goes into another dream that the king has. I'm not sure we're going to make it there, but we're going to try. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent together the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, and the magistrates, and all the officials of the province gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of every horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music. You are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image of King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. I think I got ahead of myself. Daniel chapter 2, verse 46. I want to read this part because I think it's important backstory. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and your Lord and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained at the king's court. This is happening right before. Does that boggle anybody else's mind? I mean, if we talk about all these cycles throughout the Old Testament and we look at how often Israel turns away from God and his own people, and we talk about these cycles, you can even zoom in and talk about these micro cycles. Because what did the king just do after Daniel interpreted the dream that nobody else could interpret? "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings." All these magicians and astrologists that he called before, what did they tell Nebuchadnezzar about this dream? "This is a dream given to you by," they said, "the gods." Only they can interpret it. Because what were they at? What was he asking of them? To interpret this dream with, like, he didn't even tell them what the dream was. He just said, "Hey, I had a dream, tell me about it." And they're going, "There's nobody can do that, right? This is a dream given to you," what they said, "by the gods. Only they can interpret it." And what do they say? "He's not here right now." I mean, they're not here right now. And so what you're asking is impossible. And so when Daniel steps up, Nebuchadnezzar has this realization that his God is the God. He's come face to face with it. And just as we did in Jacob, and we see this kind of pattern throughout the Bible, when Jacob it's a J name. Why? What's that? No, he's the kid, Israel's son, who interprets the dream for Pharaoh. Joseph. Oh my goodness. I was thinking Jacob, Joshua, those two aren't it. Who is it? Thank you. Joseph. When Joseph interprets this dream, we have the same type of thing. And he gets ushered into the king's house after being put in prison, after interpreting the two guys, the bread maker and his cupbearer. He interprets their dream, and one of them comes back and is like, "Hey, I know this guy," right? And so we're back in a similar position of the only person who can interpret this dream comes forth and does. And just as Pharaoh has this realization of, "Hey, surely your God is the God of gods," and what does Pharaoh do in the same instance? He brings him up, puts him in charge of everything. And through that, Joseph saves Egypt, he saves Israel, he saves, right? He continues through with God's plan to save his people because they're in famine. And just as we have in that, we have in this. where God's people are being persecuted, and the ones who are going to stand up, what's going to happen? But who has Nebuchadnezzar's ear right now? Daniel. And he appoints Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into places of power. And then the very next scene, what happens? Nebuchadnezzar is making this huge idol and saying, everybody bow down. And I have a feeling that part of that is because of the dream that he had. Because how is the dream interpreted? You, Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold, standing tall. The nation of nations. You're the king of kings is what it says. And so, like we talked about last week, I think Nebuchadnezzar probably walked away from that, didn't think anything about what's to come in the rest of the dream, and he's probably thinking, hey, for at least as long as I'm here, I'm the guy. So out of being the guy, what should I do? Everybody worship this guy. And he missed the whole part about God setting that in place. Last week we talked about Daniel. I feel like Daniel probably walked away from that being enlightened into what is happening with Nebuchadnezzar. And I feel like he walked away probably with a smile on his face. Because what did he realize and what did God reaffirm through that vision? Who's in control? God. And there's coming a time where God's going to come reestablish his kingdom. Where all these kingdoms that goes gold, silver, iron, and bronze and iron, or clay and iron, are going to get shattered. And a mountain's going to be put in his place. And I imagine Daniel saying, hey, this might not be in my lifetime, but what's he probably feeling? God's following through with his promises. And so I feel like Daniel probably walked away comforted. And Nebuchadnezzar walked away with his head bigger than ever because he missed the point. And we're actually, I even if I have to skip some stuff, we're going to get into Nebuchadnezzar's next dream because it is, is a great story. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar. And we're going to read this next thing too, because we, again, these repetitive cycles is astonishing. We're going to skip a little bit. In verse 8, therefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So what happens? They're called to do this, the music plays, and who doesn't follow? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And in VeggieTales, we have this view of the king kind of sitting up there, and he's watching everybody, and there's like 100 people, and they bow down, and he's like, I think he has this little thing that like brings them out. I don't know. It's funny. But it's not that scene. What happens? They rat him out. The Chaldeans rat him out. Why? I think it's pretty prevalent in what they tell the king. To King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image, and whoever does not fall down shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. These are foreigners put in a place of power. That's probably not very fun, is it? And so what do? They reiterate to the king, hey, this was the deal. If they don't bow down, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to throw them in the fiery furnace. And these guys whom you've appointed, they're probably saying, I like to do that sometimes with dad. It's like, hey, this was your decision. It's not working out. Right? That's human nature. The I told you so moment. And they're probably sitting back there going, no way you appointed somebody, a foreigner, who's only spent 3 years learning about what you got going on, and you appointed them over the whole province of Babylon to keep their affairs in order. And so here we are to tell you that that was a bad choice and you need to throw them in the fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, it is true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? First one should be a no-brainer, right? Is it true you don't worship my gods? Well, duh. Everything we've done to this point forward has been a rejection of your gods. Not eating of your food, right? This whole deal. And yes, this included. No, I'm not going to worship your gods. Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? We went from, surely your God is the God of gods, the God of kings, to King Nebuchadnezzar once again spitting in the face of God and saying, well, see if your God can save you from this. And who in that moment probably would have bended their knee? That would be hard not to, right? And through this, their response amazes me. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Cool. We like to think that they had this knowledge beforehand that they were going to get saved, right? It kind of feels like, hey, angel probably came to him last night and said, this is about to go down, stand firm. Their response is not that. It's not confidence out of being saved here. It's confidence of eternity. My Lord is able to save us from the fiery furnace, but even if he doesn't, he's able, but if he doesn't, know this, I'm never going to bow down to your gods. Cool. They know what's about to happen, right? That's a powerful testament. My God is able, but even if he doesn't know this, he's still the God of gods, the God of kings. I wish Daniel was sitting next to him in this moment, because I would imagine there would have been a conversation that would have been great to listen in on. But in the story that we have, and what happened, we'd see this These three guys that are comfortable and confident to the death of who their God is. How easy would it have been in that moment to go, well, and we probably make this excuse not to the extremes of this, but how easy would it have been to go, well, I can't do the Lord's work if I'm dead. I'll just bow this once, and that way I can continue on with God's work. Have we ever made that excuse? Well, I know I'm kind of in this tough position right now, but I can't do much of God's work if I'm broke. So this once, I'm just going to turn a blind eye and then we'll go back. It's an excuse we use probably far too often. And these guys are going to exemplify God to the death. To the glory of who? And they put everything in the right direction. This is one of the most amazing stories. They didn't take any credit. They didn't say, you know, because of my boldness, the Lord's going to save me. Because of me, because of this, because of that. They said, hey, my God has the ability to save us. But even if he doesn't, he's still God. Whew. No credit taken on their point. Just glorifying God. He's filled with rage. We're going to skip through some of this because I really want to get to the next dream of Nebuchadnezzar. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king," he answered and said, "but I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads were not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and set aside the king's command, and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own." What's he patting them on the back for? He's patting them on the back for doing completely opposite of what he said. Blessed be Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent an angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside their king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their house is laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Chapter 4, King Nebuchadnezzar. To all peoples, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. It has seemed good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation. Wow. Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and prospering in my palace. I saw a dream that made me afraid as I lay in bed. The fancies and the visions of my head alarmed me, so I made a decree that all the wise men of Babylon should be brought before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, enchanters, the Chaldeans and the astrologers came in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make it known to me its interpretation. At last Daniel came in before me, he who was named Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And I told him the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and that no mystery is too difficult for you, tell me the visions of my dream that I saw and their interpretation. The visions of my head as I lay in bed were these. I saw and behold, oh man, we're going to have to go through it. He has a dream of a big tree that is chopped down. The tree is sheltering beasts of the field and giving shelter to a bunch of animals. And an angel comes down and chops the tree down and leaves the stump. And the beasts are flushed out from under the tree. And he comes to Daniel and says, hey, Daniel, what does this mean? And Daniel's troubled. The king says, hey, Daniel, don't be troubled. Whatever you say, it's not going to come back on you, right? And so what Daniel does in his interpretation given to him by God is say, hey, you are this big tree. You shelter a bunch of people. You've done a lot of good things. But unless you turn away from your sins, unless you turn away from all these things, and Daniel pleads with him, says, please turn away so that your rule may be extended. And he pleads with him, and again, we have this story where he comes and he sends out a decree that whoever talks bad about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what's supposed to happen to them? They're supposed to be torn from limb from limb. And he watched this miracle ensue, and again, he comes back to the place where he's like, okay, this is the God of gods. Anybody who blasphemes that is going to be put to death. And obviously something's going on with him in the background that he is not acting how he should act. And he gives this dream to Daniel, and Daniel interprets it and says, hey, for 7 something. Your book says maybe 7 years. Not sure. That's not down exactly. It doesn't say. It's 7. I'm going to have to find it. I only have a few minutes left. You're going to eat like a beast of the field. And you're going to be cast out and put into the fields. And what happens? He pleads with him to change his ways. He doesn't change his ways. And then the king of Babylon gets sent out into a field by his own doing. Goes out into the field, and for 7 of whatever time this is, and again, it doesn't say exactly. Some people say years. But for 7 years, 7 months, whatever the case it was, the king of Babylon is living as an animal. He's eating grass. He's out there. It says his hair grows long. His hair grows long as eagle's feathers. His nails grow as long as bird's claws. And for that whole time being, he's living as an animal. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the 12th month. He was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, and the king answered and said, is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence and for the glory of my majesty? While the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and you shall be driven up from among the men, and your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. and you shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. Immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from among the men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with dew of heaven till his hair grew as long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird's claws. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. Wow. Isn't that a story? It says 7 periods of time he was driven out. Could only imagine the people under him were baffled. This king sitting on the throne goes out, and who does he say? Did I not build this with my own power for my majesty? And as soon as that happened, an angel comes down and says, hey, it's your time. And the subtitle is Nebuchadnezzar Humbled. The next one is Nebuchadnezzar Restored. And once again, he comes to the realization that God is God. And wow, what? Even if I was a Jew sitting there, I probably would have been, I don't know, we talk about this kind of cliquish. They're God's chosen people, and probably sometimes don't want to let other people in, right? They're like, I'm God's chosen people. And what's God doing through Nebuchadnezzar? He did it through Pharaoh hundreds of years ago. He's salvaging his people. But this is also God working. This story is incredible to me. Over and over and over, God gives Nebuchadnezzar this realization that he is God. And after rejection and after rejection and after rejection, we're typically sitting back and thinking, all right, this is the time where the next Moses comes in, freezes people, we move on with life, and God crushes the enemy. What does God do again? You can just almost see him just shaking him, saying, hey, wake up. This is a realization that I've given you several times before, and you keep rejecting it because of what? Pride. It's Nebuchadnezzar humbled. When he's standing on that rooftop after a year, he's saying, again, I'm the man. It's the same thing as the statue. He comes in and there's a statue and he's like, hey, everybody worship me. And he goes up on the roof to worship himself again. And God comes down and makes him eat grass like an ox for 7 periods of time, whatever it is. That's a persistent God. All right, I guess I'm out of time. I would encourage y'all to read. That is not a King Nebuchadnezzar story that you watch on VeggieTales. Read it. That story is incredible. Of God's work through somebody that he chose. That just like we see a lot of God's chosen people in Israel do. I mean, how many times did Moses reject his calling to go back to free his people? Over and over and over. Kept coming up with excuses. Jonah. How many times does Jonah say, Lord, please don't send me to Nineveh. Runs away from God. Tries everything he can and then just goes, Lord, kill me. And he's persistent. In all things, the glory is for God. He's using these lowly people, which I imagine we can relate to, so that glory can go to God. That's a pretty incredible story. I had to go way too fast through it because I tried to do too much today. Y'all read it. That is a very interesting story with poems from the king glorifying God. The heart change after each one is interesting to see. And I think that can reflect over our lives in a lot of instances. So thank y'all for being here.